Next up, the bird cage.
That was perfect.
That could not have been timed any better.
In the 2020s, a pandemic crippled the world. Some panicked, some denied it. These two guys stayed home, drank, and watched movies. These are the Jameson Tapes.
You want to talk about Eli Roth's Thanksgiving?
I mean, you can.
All I will say is...
It's not what we watched.
It's not. I watched it yesterday on a whim. I just went to the theater and was like, I'm gonna look at whatever is, like, you know, coming up in this time slot. Oh, Thanksgiving. I didn't even know it was by Eli Roth at that point. I was like, cool, a Thanksgiving horror movie. We don't have enough of those. I'll go check it out. It's pretty fun, actually. And then in the credits, it said Eli Roth. I went, oh, okay, that makes sense, given the funny gore that happened in it.
I do know that it was one of... do you remember Grindhouse?
Mm-hmm.
It was one of the fake trailers they made for Grindhouse.
Really?
Yeah. Eli Roth has had this idea kicking around for some time.
It is... it's not bad, and it actually plays around with the horror of Black Friday. So that's all I'll say. But I thought that was that was fun. So yeah, if you want just a fun little romp, yeah, check out Thanksgiving when it comes out on... Well, it'll be out by the time this episode comes out.
Yeah, yeah. So that's not the movie we watched.
No.
Everybody. The movie we watched, boy howdy, I sure could go for some apple ice cream. It was, let's start with what we're drinking.
Yeah.
I made another one.
I'm sure. I'm drinking Natto, Japanese style lager, which is Coronado Brewings, which is a San Diego brewery, trying to emulate Asahi. It doesn't do that quite well, but it is just a nice lager. So I'm happy with it. It's new. I just wanted to try that. That's all I got.
You said Natto and then said Japanese, and all I could think about was, like, the fermented, like, bean paste.
Might be a reference.
I'm like, yeah. You're drinking that?
Yeah. They'll make that bean paste in anything. I had it, actually. It was okay. It's not my favorite. Of all the things I had in Japan, like, you know, it's not the best.
I am on my second of a quadruple. I have an enormous glass beer stein that I have essentially made 4 Cuba Libres in.
So, just to let you all know, not even 4 Cuba Libres could prepare us for this fucking movie.
A movie that was... So the movie's called When Evil Lurks, and where the fuck do we start with this?
Well, first we have to preface this with the fact that Said recommended this.
Yes, this was a Said recommendation, and I am going to say the movie's good.
Yeah.
But man... We have a lot to get into, and I'm trying to figure out where to start.
It's really
tough. It's an Argentinian movie. Came out this year. It has its own rules and fills us in on those rules along the way, which I think is maybe the most interesting thing about the film.
Yes.
Everyone is aware of the rules of this universe except for us watching, and we're kind of learning as we go. It's set in a universe where, like, demon possession is a thing and, like, everyone knows about it.
Kind of.
Yeah, you say kind of. I also got the sensation that we're in a universe where it was dealt with long ago. Like, it's not viewed as a problem anymore, which is why, like,
yeah,
maybe people aren't taking it as seriously as they should.
Because there's people who, like, they're it's explained to them, they're like, you're crazy, what are you talking about? Or the people who do remember it said, oh, that was, you know, that only happens in the city or something. Like, it's dismissed as not being a big deal.
Like, it, like, demon possession is real, but if you, like, went to report it, it'd be like you going to the doctor and reporting someone has, like, what's an example of a long dead disease? Like, scarlet fever.
Bubonic plague. Like, you know, yeah. Okay, that's nice. Here's some antibiotics.
The film starts with our protagonist, Pedro. And his brother, Jaime. I will alternate between those pronunciations.
Totally,
Jaime. All the time. They hear gunshots in the night, and they, in the morning, go to see what happened. Really important, they say, because of the number of shots, that it must have been a revolver. In the morning, they go to where they heard the gunshots from, and they found a dead dude, torn apart, and there's a bunch of, like, scattered, like, weird equipment around. So they go to, like, the nearest house, where they find an old woman, her son, and her other son, who has become what they call a rotten, and, if you're rotten, you're possessed.
Essentially, yeah.
And they find out that the dead person was a cleaner. More or less, basically, an exorcist.
Yeah.
We find this out further along, but, like, you can't kill these demons by conventional means without it fucking everything up. You gotta get a cleaner in to take care of it. That they reported, let's talk about the special effects real quick, because, damn.
They're good.
The brother who's the rotten has apparently been possessed by a year, and he straight up looks like, I think I said, a bloater from Left 4 Dead.
Yeah, that's a very stereotypical, archetypal, giant bloated zombie. Looks exactly like that.
And, like, pus is leaking out of him, and he keeps, like, drooling pus. It's fucking gross. So, they were like, yeah, we called about this problem a year ago, and no one's come to help deal with it. And someone came to help deal with it last night, and apparently they're fucking dead. So, yeah, this needs to be dealt with, because this guy is possessed as fuck. So they go to the cops. The cops are like, not our fucking problem.
I don't care. Call the mayor. See what he thinks.
Oh, and this is where we meet Ruiz.
Yes.
They go to Ruiz. What is Ruiz? And how is Ruiz involved in all of this?
I think Ruiz is like the local landlord. I think he owns the land that the brothers and Maria and where this is all taking place. And they all probably like pay him rent or something. So because he keeps saying like this has been brought to my land.
Oh, hey. In hindsight, I'm realizing that kid that they swerved to miss was probably there on purpose to get Yuri.
Oh, he was one of... Yeah. Totally. Wow.
Yep.
Damn.
Anyway, that's us getting ahead. Ruiz finds out how long the possessed has been there, goes fucking apeshit. And here's where we're about to get the first, like, oh, fuck moment of the movie. He realizes the authorities aren't going to do about it. He's about to just, like, blow Uriel away with a shotgun, and Uriel's begging him to do it.
Yeah.
Because, essentially, from what I've gathered, if you kill them by non-cleaner means when they've gestated long enough, they birth a demon.
Yeah. But... I mean, and that's yes, but and we'll talk about it later, but that's not even like the extent of the infestation. It's so much more.
That's worse more than like that. There's more like an that's more like the end goal and like the symptoms along the way.
Yeah.
Also like fuck everything up. Like if you get any of this thing's fluids on you, you become possessed. If you kill it with a weapon that involves gunpowder. It spreads the possession.
You can't have somehow electrical lights on around it for reasons.
Okay, let's talk about it. How the fuck did they ever overcome this?
And that's like part of the movie, because we'll get to this, but the cleaners have to set up this like ridiculous Rube Goldberg astrolabe thing from the fucking 1400s and have to stab it in the neck with a sacred blade, and it never happens because it's like impossible to do. And that's kind of the point I think the movie is trying to make, is like actually killing this, like don't even bother. And we kept wondering aloud, like, how do you deal with this at all? This is the most OP demon possession of all time. Like nothing can stop this. It's almost like a force of nature at that point.
Was this a metaphor for COVID? Like in the past, like people would find out about disease and then they'd be like, oh yeah, let's go get vaccinated and fucking take care of this. But like nowadays, like,
I don't know. Well, I've been trying to think of what the metaphor is, because it's definitely it. And our main character is like, he's made mistakes in the past and he keeps making them by not listening to people. And that has to be part of it.
I realize we're mid-summary, but I have to get to my talking point so at least we can think about it to talk about later.
Yeah, yeah.
You and I, the two of us, have gone on record in the original season finale of the Jameson tapes. We went on record talking about how frustrating it is when people complain about the protagonists in movies doing stupid things.
True.
Like how they don't understand people who watch those movies and say that don't understand what it's like to be afraid and like make decisions on the fly.
Yes.
Pedro has challenged us.
Pedro, I think, is the exception to the rule.
Because Pedro like repeatedly gets told the things not to do and just does them.
Yeah. And that's, I get that it's a character flaw, but it's taken to such an extreme that you're just left like scratching your head going like, I don't know. At the same time, it felt like it was doomed from the start. Like there was literally nothing anyone could have done. Even like just running away at the drop of a hat would not have achieved anything, because someone else would have fucked up somewhere. But I don't know. I really don't know what the metaphor or the moral here is, because something about like you can't run away from your problems, but the problems are going to happen anyway and there's nothing you can do about it. I don't know. I really don't know yet.
There is a scene in this movie where I finally fucking lost it. Where like Pedro is with someone who is a retired cleaner. And she just needs him to go get her tools to take care of the issue.
Mm-hmm.
And they're surrounded by, I won't say by who yet. We'll get to that through the rest of the summary. But she very clearly says, go get my tools. Don't run. They'll suspect something. And in 0.5 seconds, Pedro breaks out into a jog and she's like, what the fuck are you doing?
What did I just say?
What did I just say? And I'm like, I'm there like, fucking yeah, Pedro, my guy. Okay. Okay.
Pedro. Yeah. Anyway.
Pedro is our protagonist. And I do sympathize with him, because, like, hey, spoiler alert, this is not a movie where many good things happen.
No, and there's just this pervasive specter of hopelessness.
This is, I've seen a lot of, like, trauma stuff, and, I've watched a lot of horror. This is maybe the bleakest and meanest movie I've ever seen.
Yeah, like there's nothing you can do. There's nothing anyone can do. Even the people who know what's going on barely can react to what's going on because it's already too late. Like by the end of the film, it's basically revealed like you all were doomed from the start. By the time you figured out that there was even a rotten, like it was too late. Don't fucking bother. And what do you do with that? I don't know. I don't know how to feel for my protagonist because he fucked up consistently, but does it matter? Not really. If he had done everything right, it was too late. I don't know.
This really might be about COVID, huh?
I mean, it. Something's like, go. What was that line she said? Like, you have to. The only way to escape it is to like go where even you don't. The summer you don't even know exists. And I know we've talked about other movies. And we are living in a time where more and more media, even if it's not directly about COVID, COVID will have had a inextricable effect on people making movies. Like it's gonna play into the art that is being made, either consciously or subconsciously. And this could be part of that. There's a lot of folklore in here. There's a lot of just, I don't know. It's a lot. It's from a perspective that we, you know, I'm not really used to, that being Argentina. And it's like, I'm very happy that it exists. It's a good movie, but I also can't help but feel like I'm just missing something. Cause it's something this bleak and defeatist is hard to really wrap my head around.
So, I had mentioned we got to our first oh shit moment.
Mm-hmm.
And then we went off on like a tangent or two. Ruiz basically conscripts Jaime and Pedro into just getting this Rotten far away from them, getting Uriel far away from them. So there's a almost slapstick comedy scene of them just like screaming at each other as they pick him up with bed sheets. The bed sheet tears briefly. And they're trying not to get any of this thing's fluids on them or whatever. They're already talking about how they have to burn their clothes after this. Ruiz wears gloves. I don't know if Jaime and Pedro do as well.
I don't think they did.
So they load up Uriel and they drive, I think they say something like 300 kilometers away.
Something like, yeah.
Far,
but not really that far.
There's a kid in the road, so they swerve to miss the kid, and they swerve hard. And then they go to check on the Uriel in the back, and Uriel is just gone. But they decide, yep, that's far enough away. This has been dealt with. Problem's no longer ours, so whatever. So Ruiz gets home, where his pregnant wife has made him dinner. And Ruiz, Jaime, and Pedro are like all have these moments where they're just like they're certainly not celebrating like they took care of the problem.
No, they don't feel like there's no resolution.
Yeah, I think they know they fucked up.
Yeah.
So finally, Ruiz's pregnant wife says that they figure out something's wrong with one of their goats. Ruiz fires a gun in the air and all the goats run away except for one. And that goat comes closer and closer and like presses its head against the barrel of the gun.
Mm-hmm.
Because these things want you to shoot them so they can spread their evil.
Yeah.
And his wife is like screaming, don't shoot it, don't shoot it, it'll spread the evil, whatever. And finally, he just blows the goat's brains out. And the wife grabs a wood chopping axe nearby and just slams it into his fucking head. Then gets on her knees with the axe and just swings it into her own face repeatedly.
Pregnant wife, by the way.
Pregnant wife.
He's doing this also for their kid. Like, this is such a horrific end times fucking situation that she's not even going to let, you know, her unborn child experience this.
Yeah.
That was bleak.
So, Pedro and Jaime find out about Ruiz. And Pedro makes the decision, like, okay, we're going to go to my divorced wife's house. I'm not allowed to be around her, but we're going to get her and my kids and the dog. And we're going to get the hell out of there. So I think the youngest daughter and son she's had with, the youngest daughter she's had with her new husband.
Yeah.
There's a very young son as well. But the older son, we know for sure, is Pedro's. And that's Jair?
Jair is the older son. Santino is the younger one. And then Vicky is the one from the new dad.
Okay, so they go to the house, the new dad. And this is my favorite Pedro moment. Probably also, I know we're jumping ahead, probably my spider room moment. As Pedro arrives at the house and immediately just strips complete, arrives at his ex-wife's house and immediately just strips completely naked and says, hey, bring me some changes of clothes to the his wife's new husband. Like, making no attempt to look like a sane person at all. The ex-wife comes downstairs with the son and covers the son's eyes as he is just butt-fucking naked. And he's all like, hey, we gotta burn these clothes, and also I gotta, like, go ahead and get a new set of clothes, and we gotta get the hell out of here. Something, something rotten, something, something, something. And while he's doing this, the dog licks his old clothes on the ground.
Yeah.
And even though it's telegraphed, the payoff is my second oh fucking shit moment.
Yeah.
Which brings us to another thing about this movie. Fuck them kids.
Does not, like, yeah, I think a lot of Western movies really shy away from hurting animals, or depictions of hurting animals, depictions of hurting children. This does not. Like, kids are just utterly, utterly murdered and possessed and scapegoated. That plays really heavily into this movie, is like children being a source of grief and regrets and, like, just problems. It's weird. Like, their parents love them, but they're just continually, like, they're just, like, the source of all these issues. It's strange.
So, what kind of dog would you say they have? It's a big fucking dog.
Yeah, it wasn't a pit bull, but it was, like, pit bull-esque. It was a pincer? So, I don't think it's a pincer.
So, while Pedro is arguing with, ex-wife and stepdad, it keeps cutting to the little girl and the dog. It is so telegraphed that something's going to happen. It's like, oh, here's the argument. Here's the little girl and the dog again. Here's the argument. Here's the little girl and the dog again. Literally, the dog snatches the girl by the head and starts slamming her around like that scene in The Avengers when Hulk smashes Loki into the ground.
It really was dog smash.
And it's kind of funny.
it is so, because up until this point, it's been kind of a slow burn and there has been a lot of really good tension. And I think that is the point where the movie just says, all right, we're going to, like, speed this shit up, buckle up, because, you know, all hands and feet inside the car at all times.
So the dog smashes the little girl around, and then runs away carrying her. And the stepdad grabs a gun and is like, I'm going to go fucking deal with this shit. And Pedro is like, hey, don't do it. Don't do it. Don't shoot the dog. It's the first time and last time Pedro demonstrates an understanding of the rules involved with everything going on here.
Yeah, what the fuck?
So Pedro goes back inside to gather up his other son, Jair, who is autistic. And he helps Jair get ready, and while they're off dealing with the dog, Pedro is trying to convince Jair and convince Jair and Santino to help them steal their mom's car so they can get the hell out of there. And it's Jair who shows where the keys are. They load up into the car just in time to find out stepdad has shot the dog.
Yep.
They get loaded up in the car. They're driving away, and the little girl's fine. She's great. Everything's fine with her.
It's cool.
So they pull away in the minivan while the little girl goes up her mom, Sabrina, and says, "Hey, Dad's about to kill you." And she's like perfectly fine. Like the little girl is like absolutely fine. Doesn't look like she just got Hulk smashed around by an enormous dog. And the little girl says, "Dad's about to kill you. Dad's about to come back and kill you." And we think they mean Pedro.
Yeah.
But sure enough, stepdad, now possessed by after shooting the dog. It's Sabrina like full on with a car. A little girl dances around happily while that happens, which is great. So now Pedro has escaped with his two sons, except his mom, and doesn't tell her what's going on. We get a long scene of them driving, a lot of good character work done, where the mom also explains that like this is a thing that's been dealt with already. There are systems in place to deal with this.
To my Spider Room moment, which is she says, "Oh, don't you remember the song?" And then starts singing out this song of like how to tell if someone's possessed and what not to do about it. Like it's a fucking nursery rhyme or something.
Yeah. It's their own Ring Around the Rosie. Which it classically believed to be about the plague.
Correct.
It's at this point that Jaime, who doesn't get a lot to do in the movie, he's just the main character's brother. He's Luigi.
Yeah, he's got the mustache too.
I joke early on in the movie, he's got the mustache and a beret on, and I say he looks like Saddam Hussein. Jaime is like, "Oh, hey. I remember a place where we can stop, which is someone I've been friends with a while, who used to be a cleaner." Why the fuck did you not bring that up before?
Yeah, like, upon discovering the dead cleaner, oh shit, I know a cleaner, let's go talk to her and get her out here. Just never bothered to bring that up until now, but alright.
They also keep saying, stick to the plan over and over again. At this point, is their plan to go find Uriel and kill him, or...?
No, the plan is run. The plan is just, like, get kids and leave and hope to have money without, like, following through at any point, because they, like, pick up their mom, and she even, like, they try to go to a rest stop or something, and they, like, don't have enough money for the apple ice cream that he promised Jair, which is very important. And yes, like,
apple ice cream is very, very important. I actually really want some fucking apple ice cream now.
Right. And she even says, like, "I don't have any money. You didn't tell me to bring anything. You just said, you know, we're hopping in the car." So the plan is run, and it's so loosely put together that might as well not be one.
So while they're on this family fun road trip, they get Jair a popsicle, but he is not responding to the popsicle because it's not apple ice cream. And I don't blame him. Can I say something controversial?
Yes.
Popsicles suck.
Agreed. whenever the ice cream truck came around, the last thing I ever wanted was a fucking popsicle. You give me that ice cream.
Yeah. I can understand it being a hot day or whatever, and that being the only thing around. Sure, fine. Popsicle is a Band-Aid on the boo-boo, but, like, I don't know.
If the options are there, I'm not choosing popsicle.
Gotta get me a WWF ice cream bar. One half is cookie and one half is chocolate fudge, and it's ice cream in the middle, and it was perfect. And it's got a picture of the fucking Roddy Piper on it, so...
Nice.
Bring back WWF ice cream bars, CM Punk, hashtag ice cream bars. They get a phone call, and it's the mom. So Pedro, being dumb, he's dumb. Pedro's dumb. The youngest is like, hey, it's mom. I want to talk to mom. Let me talk to mom. I'm going to talk to mom. And Pedro just takes the phone. Walks a fairly good distance away from the car and answers the phone. And Sabrina, clearly not possessed by a demon, says, hey, I hate you. I'm coming to get my kids back. I cheated on you a lot, and it was great. It's because I cheated on you because you suck. And I'm coming to get the kids back. And Pedro smashes the phone, which is what he should have fucking done in the first place. So they arrive at the house of Mirta. The ex-cleaner doesn't have any electricity in her house because demons.
She's a cleaner. She knows.
She's a cleaner. She knows. She knows what she's doing. So the rest of this movie should have just been people listening to her.
her. We'll get to her backstory because that's my other Spider-Room moment.
Yeah, it's a weird one. Honestly, that goes so many places. I want to hear your interpretation of the backstory.
Oh my god.
Like, not even interpretation. Like, that was so fucking hard for me to follow.
Just, I will do my best to recount it, having just seen it. But I audibly said, what? After it happened, because I just, yeah, what? Anyway, they go to her house, and she's like, you know, are you sure you saw it? Are you sure?
The really important thing she notes immediately is, hey, your autistic son, probably possessed.
Yeah, he's fucking possessed. His hands and his feet are backwards. And how did you idiots not notice this?
She is welcoming them into her home because she apparently can't even be affected by the,
Her logic is that she can't be affected because she's not afraid to die. And she says that later. But it's at this point, a couple important things happen that I think gave us pause. Number one, possessed Tahir and it's trapped because he has autism is a weird thing.
It's
and I
weird.
I still don't know how I feel about that.
I feel it's weird.
I said, like, ain't no one else ever put that in a movie. Should they have? I don't know.
It's it's a strong choice.
bold indeed. And then at that point, this is when she starts just like exposition dumping through a lot of just her talking. And the rules that were previously unexplained start to get explained. And it just is this overwhelming, convoluted thing that sounds absolutely insurmountable. How do you deal with this? How is it even possible at this point, given what's happened? And I don't want to say the movie falls apart, but any like hope you have for a resolution falls apart because it's like, well, what are they going to do?
Maybe not COVID in general. Maybe just like
climate change?
Yeah, I was about to say all of the inevitable things.
Yeah, you can't kill it, and you know, shoot things with gun. Don't use technology because that's our making it worse.
Our kids are fucked.
Our kids are fucked, and it's going to target them more than us because we'll be gone. Maybe it is climate
change. I think we just fucking cracked it.
Okay. I'm more happy about that than the fact that it wasn't about pregnant mothers. There was a pregnant mother in here.
Yeah.
But she was gone pretty quickly.
Ella, visceral, that scene.
Oof. Reckless.
A lot of scenes in this movie just are gonna stick with me. Because
yeah,
we're getting to another one.
Yeah, we're basically Sabrina catches up with them. Like, there's nothing they can do about it. And creeps into the room where Grandma and Santino are sleeping, and she takes Santino, and Grandma wakes everyone up and says, like, I don't know what to do. She's here, but it's not hers, because half of her face is fucking gone from being hit with a goddamn car. And she jumps out the window after telling Pedro, like, I told you I'd come back for my kids. And they go to try... So Jaime goes off to hunt her down. Not sure why, other than we're worried for the kid, I guess. But, like, she's gone. Like, the demon has him. What the fuck are you going to do?
Right.
And then Pedro and Mitra, or Mitra, Mirtha, Mitra's from Conan Exiles. Mirtha are, they're like, we're going to go kill Uriel. Because we have a cleaner now. And so we have a splitting of the party.
So, okay. Jaime goes off in the pickup truck to find Sabrina and Santino. Because Santino immediately got into his mom's arms and was like, oh, mom's here. Tight.
He's seven. Yeah, what's going to happen?
So, when we finally do catch up to Sabrina, Jaime is like turning his lights on and off and on and off and on and off, and I'm just sitting there screaming about, like, they said no electric light.
Well, that's what really pissed me off too, because at one point he's like, he's yelling at Mirtha to, like, get flashlights, and I'm thinking, that's electric. Like, wouldn't she say, no, I don't have those? Why the fuck would I have those? Those are electric, but hey, whatever.
Anyway. He finally catches up to Sabrina and just pulls alongside her. I'm laughing, but it's fucked up.
It is. The absurdity is what makes it funny.
And she is eating Santino.
Eating his brains. Like, has crushed his, like, taken the top of his skull off and is just eating out of his head. Like, and he, like, rolls up and stops and goes, what do I do?
Like, the way you'd be walking in the park snacking on some popcorn or something. Mm-hmm. She's on a stroll snacking on Santino. It's real fucked up. So finally,
he snaps.
Yeah, he fucking snaps and hits her with the truck.
Barrels into a tree.
Yeah. And her head comes through the windshield, still alive, barely. And says, you told me you loved me.
Yeah.
So
apparently that happened too.
Yeah.
This family's fucked up.
Yeah. Before we catch up to Mirtha and Pedro, we go back to Mirta's house where Grandma is waiting with Jair. And Jair, who's been, like, unresponsive this entire time because he's autistic, just, like, gets up and is just talking.
Yeah, it was fine. Clearly super possessed. Which, again, does demon possession cure autism? That's a weird choice.
Weird.
I don't know.
Bold. Weird.
Visionary.
I like how uncomfortable it is, actually.
Yeah, like, this... If the objective of the film is to make you uncomfortable, and it does that in spades.
Yeah.
So good work, film.
So Pedro and Mirta arrive at a schoolhouse full of children. And they say, hey, we're looking for someone injured. We're looking for somebody. And the children are outright lying to them.
Yeah.
Like, they keep telling... They're looking for Uriel, and they keep telling him that Uriel is somewhere else. Like, oh, he's over... He's being kept safe at my house. He's at the teacher's house.
Yeah.
From there, about to leave. Then they realize these children are under control of the possession, and they're like, they're lying because he's here.
Mm-hmm.
So they go to like a stage.
It's like an auditorium with a yeah, stage. It's
auditorium. And they find a hammer, and the floorboards of the stage are loose. So they look in the stage. And they find a bunch of dead people covered in a lime.
Lime, yeah.
And Mirta tells Pedro to move around the dead people to see if they can find Uriel. Hey, Uriel's in there. This was my peak frustration with Pedro. it really feels like punishment for us. After
our hubris.
For our hubris.
Oh, you think you know things. That's cute.
Yeah. We went off on this whole tangent. This movie's like, oh yeah? Here he is.
Well, if our theory about like the metaphor is correct, then it fits here.
Yeah.
Oh, you know what? Uriel, Archangel of Wisdom.
Yeah.
Like, again, plays into it.
Uriel is using his demon influence on the kids, and the kids are just, like, trying to stop Pedro and Mirta from doing what they're doing. Again, Mirta has the moment I talked about previously where she's like, hey, Pedro, go to the car and get my demon-killing stuff, but do it slowly so they don't suspect anything.
Don't make a scene.
Yeah. And he immediately starts jogging, and she's like, I literally just said
god damn it.
I'm
one day from retirement. No, I'm already retired.
He comes back with the stuff, and it's all like weird steampunky,
just archaic, weird
stuff.
Yeah,
we never get any explanation for like what it does or how it's supposed to work. And you know what, fine. I think
that's the point. Like, yeah. Okay, if it is a metaphor for climate change, it's like, well, how do you fix it? Dude, that is so complicated, and it's going to require so much change that you as an individual cannot even fathom, and nor could you do it. And that's why trying to fight climate change on an individual basis feels hopeless, because you literally can't do it alone. So the fact that it's almost mystical, kind of makes sense now.
And if this is about
this movie's COVID, fucking dark.
Also, if this is about COVID, one of the characters being autistic is a whole can of worms I do not want to open.
Jesus Christ.
Anyway, long story short, Mirch is like, hey, don't listen to the kids. They're gonna try and get you to fuck up. They want you to kill Uriel. They want you to kill Uriel so basically the fucking Antichrist can be born.
Like, all of this was, it feels like it was orchestrated. They happened upon the school. They found the hammer next to the floorboards that were clearly loose. They wanted him. They wanted Pedro to find Uriel because they know that Pedro has no self-control and he will fuck up. And he does.
So Uriel's taunting him to kill him. The kids are taunting him to kill him. And the kids mention something about there being a fire axe in the next room.
Yeah, because the mechanism here is Mirta has to kill Uriel, or like he has to see the nape of his neck with a weird blade, but Pedro can't lift Uriel up because he's like 500 pounds or something. And so he's like, I can't lift him up. I need to get more floorboards undone. And one of the kids says, oh, well, there's a fire axe. That'll help you get through the floorboards faster than that that hammer, G. Willikers. And Mirza's like, don't like what? Just do it. But don't do that. And then, of course,
yeah, he does. Pedro then goes to the next room. They immediately lock him in the room and then beat Mirza to death with a hammer.
Yeah.
So Pedro breaks the glass of the door of the room he's been locked into and undoes. They don't lock the room. They seal. They wrap metal wire
around it. Yeah.
He could have kicked open the door. Anyway.
He already busted open a fucking car window with his fucking elbow.
We're becoming those guys.
Well, okay, but. To be fair, like the way that Pedro's character written is that he has to, like, no correct choices are ever made by him. There is nothing but mistakes made for the sake of the plot and for the sake of this metaphor, we're assuming. So if you're going to make...
Okay.
Like, I will say that this film has tiny flaws in it, and they are 100% nitpicks. They should not be taken like, you know, oh, don't watch this film because of that. But I did notice them. Whatever. It doesn't mean anything.
I think what gets to us the most is he is, like, warned of... He is told the correct things to do at every turn. And he just doesn't listen.
Yeah. Well, and again, if he is... If this is climate change, how long have scientists been warning everybody, hey, you know, stop doing X, or it's going to lead to Y, and... we just kept doing X.
Yeah.
It makes sense. And it is supposed to be frustrating. And again, this is like why he is the exception to the rule of you can't call out, you know, a horror movie protagonist for making mistakes because they're afraid. But again, oh God, I don't know. The point is, yeah, he fucks up.
He gets out of the room. Okay, I'll come back to the scene later. I have another spider room moment.
Sure.
And he kills Uriel.
Sure. Yeah.
He grabs like the dismantled pieces of the site of the steampunk thing and just smashes his fucking skull in, and Uriel smiles.
Mm-hmm.
Uriel splits open, and a little kid covered with blood comes out, and like almost taunting Pedro. Puts his hand on top of its head,
pats him on the head,
yeah. And walks away, just like sparing him.
Yeah.
But like,
not even sparing, like saying, "Okay, now you get to watch all this unfold, and you get to live with the fact that it's your fault."
So, our epilogue. the Antichrist leaves, taking the children with it. In the epilogue, Pedro, Jaime, and Jair, they're home, and Jair finally gets apple ice cream. The end. No.
Well, Jair starts choking, and Pedro goes over and sees that he's like still has the spoon in his mouth because he doesn't know how to eat correctly. But it turns out, actually, he's choking on bits of his grandmother that he ate, because that was also hinted at in other parts of the movie, not important. And that is the last straw for Pedro. He walks outside. He, you know, falls to his knees and starts yelling and sobbing. And his brother is there. And he's like, don't even, you know, don't go in.
There's also this thing with the brother. When we were talking about this being inevitable from the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
Returns to the shack where they first picked up Uriel. Uriel's brother is there and confesses that, like, he had a demon's voice in his head, and he killed the cleaner that was sent originally.
The first cleaner, yeah.
And ate him. And also he ate his mom. Yeah. And then we get the reveal that Jair ate grandma, and Pedro just, like, it ends on Pedro just, like, having lost everything and being completely done.
Is there a metaphor there for eating the previous generation?
Because
it's not
be.
Eating the rich.
Yeah.
It's not eating the rich per se, but it is like, there's got to be something there too. Because they did it so many times.
We may be the only two people who've made this conclusion, but like,
I don't know.
I think I'm sticking by it.
Yeah, no, it too much is aligning for it to not be true, given how bleak this is. Because if something is this hopeless, it has to be, it can't be personal at this point. It has to be broader. Yeah, then the movie ends, and up next is the birdcage.
That's the funniest fucking thing.
We're the credits are rolling, and we're just like, oh no, like what do we do with this? And then Prime says, well, ready okay. to watch the Birdcage. I'm on Shudder, by the way. Like I saw we were watching this on Shudder, and Prime was still like, nope, gotta watch
we
the
were
Birdcage
with Robin like, Williams. The credits started rolling, and like I was just like simmering in the fucking misery of that movie.
Mm-hmm.
And like all of a sudden up next to the Birdcage.
Perfect. I can't think of another movie that just, isn't better to just like transition to if you just went through what we went through.
Just mwah. oh god.
Oh,
so we have to make a cocktail.
Well, we have two more spider room moments to discuss.
Yeah,
mine for sure was when Pedro and Mirta are driving off to find Uriel. Mirta's doing another exposition dump, and she's giving her character's backstory, which is she and her husband made a fake church and they were scamming people, and then the rotten came to them and they thought it was an actor they hired, but it wasn't, it was real. So then they talked to the monks, you know, the monks that were always there to figure out how to become cleaners to atone for their sins, and then she left and now she's back, and that was in the span of like a minute.
Yeah.
And I have to wonder why the what was the point?
Well,
who cares? I mean, you're a cleaner. Like, do we need to know?
Okay. Applying our interpretation, it does come back a lot, a couple times, to this idea that like, even though this is like demonic possession, like religion is of no help anymore. Praying to God is
they
of no help.
They do keep saying. Yeah, churches are dead, God is dead. That's said multiple times throughout the film.
So,
like they're like God has abandoned us or like was never there in the first place.
So maybe it's just furthering that point.
Could be.
But applying it to the whole our interpretation of the whole global warming thing, that yeah, whatever you feel about religion, global warming is not a situation we're going to pray ourselves out of. We need to make actual changes. And
right. Yeah. Running from it doesn't solve it. Praying for it doesn't solve it. And there is a constant theme of people, you know, being within the vicinity of one another and not properly working together and not listening or doing the opposite of what someone is saying. And it leading to continual problems.
Yeah.
And the people who are committing these are the older generation than the kids in the movie. So yeah. No, I think we're right. I think that's the metaphor here.
Even if we're wrong, the overall theme is hopelessness. And like,
true.
We've just kind of like, if we're wrong and that wasn't what they meant, we've just kind of like, retrofitted the most hopeless thing to the film.
And yeah, like if we are off base, the world is going through a definite period of existential dread, no matter like what way you cut it. So the fact that that would influence artists also tracks, you know, whatever the metaphor is. And yeah.
My other Spider-Man moment. What was the first one I said?
The first one was the dog.
Oh, yeah. Oh, no, my first one was him getting buck naked in the...
Sorry, yeah, you're right.
Adjacent to the dog. My other Spider-Room moment is Uriel popping his head out of the stage like a whack-a-mole.
That was cute. He's just smirking at Pedro. Yeah. It was funny.
Like, hey. Hey, buddy.
Hey.
How you doing? And he literally does fucking whack-a-mole him.
He does.
Wow. So, we have to make a drink.
Oh, boy.
Apple brandy milkshake.
How do you distill hopelessness?
Oh, Lord.
Ooh, yeah. What's the hardest pill to swallow? I feel like apple has to be in it.
Apple brandy and Malort.
Oh, God. Ew. That would make you throw up so quick.
Yeah.
Oh. Apple, okay. Equal parts apple brandy and Malort and a garnish. Just because, you know, as a fuck you to whomever is drinking it.
Doesn't have to be equal parts. True. If we did an apple brandy milkshake. No. But like an eyedropper full of Malort.
Mm-hmm.
Like
just to poison the well.
Because the apple ice cream is what helps make the bad thing go down.
It's true.
Garnish with
hair.
Garnish with hair.
This is the worst thing we've ever made.
It's pretty bad. We'll say,
but you know what? That's like that's how you're supposed to feel when you drink this. It's like I have to drink this and I have no choice and it's horrible.
I will say, like, okay. I've had a lot of Malort now. I can do a shot of Malort and not make a face. It's fine. I think in small doses in a larger cocktail, Malort can function as a bitters.
Could be. Yeah, maybe just straight. It's just not palatable for the most part.
Probably talked about this on the show, but like the story behind the mythology behind Malort is really fucking funny.
It is. Yeah.
Just like during Prohibition, they sold it out of a drugstore as medicine, and like they sent the feds to be like, hey, let's have a taste of this medicine you're selling, and they tasted it and immediately were like, well, we can't classify that as illegal because we can't prove anyone drinks that for pleasure. Yeah,
this was Shudder's first Spanish language production, which is pretty cool.
We'll call it the rotten apple.
Yeah. All right. The poison apple. No, rotten. Yeah, rotten makes rotten, sense. Yeah.
Okay. Okay. Now, typically we try and make good drinks for good movies, and this was a pretty goddamn good movie. But it left us no other choice.
No. To do what
we just did.
Do watch this movie, but be prepared for the bleakness, because abandon all joy, ye who enter here.
Yeah. And hey, maybe after it's over, if you like some like really catty gay humor, watch The Birdcage.
I know I've said it before, but it does have one of my favorite lines in a movie of all time, which is, you brought a toothbrush to a cemetery. How Egyptian. just perfect.
I actually do want apple ice cream, and I do want to watch The Birdcage now.
Right. I need a palate cleanser after this.
Anyway,
if you enjoyed this.
Oh.
Yeah.
Yep.
I was consider. Yeah, I know. consider donating to the Patreon so we can continue to do this. And hopefully the next thing we can, you want to watch like VHS 85 after this or something?
maybe, I don't know. Maybe something. Realize this is a horror show, but let's watch something like happy.
Yeah. Something kind of lighthearted. Goddamn.
This boy. There is an enormous.
Thanks, Sade.
There's an enormous weight on my soul now that can only be sated by apple ice cream in the birdcage.
Yeah, this is doing wonders for my eco anxiety.
Anyway, well. The Patreon. We have stuff there. Watch that. Bye. Goodbye. Bye now.
Bye.
The Jameson Tapes is hosted and created by Alan Chaney and Abysme. If you have a movie suggestion for the podcast, please leave a comment, message us on the Creative Horror Discord, or tweet at Creative Horror with the hashtag Jameson Tapes. Creative Horror is a network of creators working together to build a constructive community of horror fans. Please visit us at creativehorror.com.